Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 16, entitled How Pariksit Received the Age of Kali, text 13 to 15. Tatra tatra pasinvana. Swapurvesam mahatmanam. Pragiyamanam chayasa. Krishna Mahatmya Suchakam. Then the next verse is Atmanam Chaparitratam Ashvatam no Stratejasa Sneham Chavishnipartanam Tesam Bhaktim Chakeshavi Tibya Paramasantusta Priti Urjibrim Talochanaha Mahadana Nivashramshi Dado Haran Mahamanaha Tatra Tatra. Everywhere the king visited. Upasinvanaha. Continuously he heard. Swapurvesam. About his own forefathers. Mahatmanam. Who were all great devotees of the Lord. Pragiyamanam. Unto those who were thus addressing. Cha. Also. Yashaha. Glories. Krishna. Lord Krishna. Mahatmya. Glorious acts. Suchakam, indicating, Atmanam, his personal self, Cha, also, Paritratam, delivered, Ashvatamna, of Ashvatama, Astra, weapon. Tejasa, powerful rays. Sneham, affection. Cha, also. Vrishne Partanam, between descendants of Vrishni and those of Prita. Tesam, of all of them. Bhaktim, devotion. Cha, also. Keshave, unto Lord Krishna. Tibya, unto them. Parama, extremely. Santusta, pleased. Priti, attraction. Ujjimbitaha, pleasingly open. Lochanaha, one who has such eyes. Mahadanani, valuable riches. Vasamshi, clothing. Dado, gave in charity. Hara, necklace. Mahamanaha, one who has a broader outlook. Translation. Wherever the king visited, he continuously heard the glories of his great forefathers, who were all devotees of the Lord, and also of the glorious acts of Lord Krishna. He also heard how he himself had been protected by the Lord from the powerful heat of the weapon of Ashvatthama. People also mentioned the great affection between the descendants of Vrishni and Prita due to the latter's great devotion to Lord Keshava. The king, being very pleased with the singers of such glories, opened his eyes in great satisfaction. Out of magnanimity, he was pleased to award them very valuable necklaces and clothing. Purport. Kings and great personalities of the state are presented with welcome addresses. This is a system from time immemorial. And Maharaj Pariksit, since he was one of the well-known emperors of the world, was also presented with addresses of welcome in all parts of the world as he visited those places. The subject matter of those welcome addresses was Krishna. Krishna meant Krishna and his eternal devotees, as the king means the king and his confidential associates. Krishna and his unalloyed devotees cannot be separated. Therefore, glorifying the devotees means glorifying the Lord, and vice versa. Maharaj Pariksit would not have been glad to hear about the glories of his forefathers like Maharaj Yudhisthira and Arjuna had they not been connected with the acts of Lord Krishna. The Lord descends specifically to deliver his devotees, paritranaya sadhanam. The devotees are glorified by the presence of the Lord because they cannot live for a moment without the presence of the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is present for the devotees by his acts and glories, and therefore Maharaj Pariksit felt the presence of the Lord when he was glorified by his acts, especially when he was saved by the Lord in the womb of his mother. The devotees of the Lord are never in danger, but in the material world, which is full of dangers at every step, the devotees are apparently placed into dangerous positions, and when they are saved by the Lord is glorified. Lord Krishna would not have been glorified as the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita had his devotees like the Pandavas not been entangled in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. All such acts of the Lord were mentioned in the addresses of welcome, and Maharaj Pariksit, in full satisfaction, rewarded those who presented such addresses. The differences between the presentation of welcome addresses today and in those days is that formerly the welcome addresses were presented to a person like Maharaj Pariksit. The welcome addresses were full of facts and figures, and those who presented such addresses were sufficiently rewarded. Whereas in the present day, the welcome addresses are presented not always with factual statements, but to please the postholder, and often they are full of flattering lies, and rarely are those who present such welcome addresses received by the poor receiver. Rewarded by the poor receiver. Sorry. So in glorifying a devotee, we can take note that in the glorification we should speak of actual achievements. When we begin to glorify someone for things they have not done, then that glorification is not counted as glorification. And it becomes flattery. That is what is being presented here. But Maharaj Pariksit and his ancestors were being glorified for actual achievements. So in a Vyasa Puja offering, for example, we must look at some recognizable achievements, and we glorify a Vaishnava for his recognizable achievements. And then the whole exchange becomes very enlivening, because it's based on the truth. And the truth then stands out in all its glory, and then it confirms our faith, then it will nourish us. But everything is based on externals, right? We're starting to glorify people in ritualistic things without actually recognizing the achievements of a person. Then the whole thing becomes a hollow facade, right? And a hollow ceremony. And then actually it's not enlivening to the heart. So this is a key principle in that somehow or other these exchanges in glorifying the Vaishnavas are based on genuine recognition. Therefore, sometimes it is said that the disappearance day of a Vaishnava is more important than the appearance day, because on the disappearance day, the Vaishnava has already shown all his transcendental attributes. He has already done so many things, and thus we can remember all those things. Therefore, sometimes the disappearance day is considered more important than the appearance day. Glorification is of Krishna and his devotees is the essence. When we speak about the devotees, we also speak about Krishna, because the devotees are always remembering Krishna. Just as when we speak about Prabhupada, automatically you speak about Krishna, because when we start to glorify Prabhupada, then sooner or later we get to glorification of Krishna. Prabhupada points at Krishna. Prabhupada is glorifying Krishna. Just as we see Prabhupada in one of his glory moments in Vrindavan on the altar, worshipping Krishna and Balaram in the first arti with the peacock fan, and he's very famous for that. So Prabhupada is glorified as the servant of Krishna, not independently. Prabhupada is also, when he's glorified for writing his books, Prabhupada was sometimes seen reading his own books and relishing them. Someone made a comment, relishing your own books. Prabhupada said, no, these books are dictated by Krishna. Right? So, whether dictated in the heart or whether, Krishna was sitting there talking in his ear, that we leave in the middle. We can't know. Vaishnavira kriya vijnana bujaya. In glorifying a Vaishnava who is superior to us, we are going beyond our own level of perception, because his glories, his realizations, go beyond anything that we can understand. Just as a child cannot fully understand the life of an adult, it's not possible. In the same way, we cannot fully understand. So we're glorifying great Vaishnavas, and yet we are not able to fully glorify, because their glories and their relationship with Krishna is beyond us. And when we project our own reality upon the superior Vaishnavas, we're making a mistake. So when we start to project ordinary emotions upon a superior Vaishnava, we make a mistake, because he's operating on a different level. Ordinary people may be caught up in all kinds of jealousy. Right? There are, this one is causing me trouble, and that one is obstructing me, and this one, it's doesn't give me any space, and that one, and that is the normal standard of relationships in the world, based on pasu buddhi, or animalistic tendencies. Right. And then in between, we have some sweet moments, and then again. But we cannot project, even when it seems that between senior Vaishnavas there is enmity, we cannot understand. We cannot understand it. But we must be very careful in these matters. Vaishnavira kriya vijnana bujaya. Sometimes we glorify Vaishnava for some achievements, but maybe those achievements are not the ultimate achievement, because maybe we cannot see. We cannot see through the eyes of Krishna. We cannot, but still, we glorify. What we see, that we glorify. Here it is described that worshipping Krishna means also worshipping Krishna's devotees. And that was a point, it sparked off a memory of the concluding words of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Srila Prabhupada is saying that yes, Krishna is in the heart, but Krishna is not alone. All his associates are also with him, and therefore the spiritual master is also with him. Therefore, my spiritual master is always with me. And he's depicting there how in the heart Krishna is sitting, all the incarnations of Krishna are sitting, all the associates of Krishna are sitting, the acharyas are there. It's pretty full there. It's quite an assembly. There's a whole assembly in the heart. The heart is an assembly hall. But if you think about it like that, it's quite amazing. So in this way, the Guru is always present with us. And Prabhupada was very conscious of that and very much thinking of that. And therefore, in every of his actions, he was always offering them to his spiritual master at all times. Therefore, glorification of the spiritual master is not only a matter of once a year on a Vyasa Puja, writing a poem, you know, and actually recognizing some of his glories. No, it also means Amar Agyaye Guru Hai Eidesh, Tare Eidesh, that we act upon the order of the spiritual master, who gives us Krishna Upadesh, he gives us the teachings of Krishna, and then he wants us to act upon it. So glorification means to act. Glorification, otherwise it's only lip service. Words, you know, are cheap. And it's easy to do some words. I'll speak some words of glorification. Nice, you know. But now, some actions of glorification. Prabhupada is being glorified by appreciating that what he said was very relevant. Because Prabhupada gave instructions about what to do in life. So by doing these activities, we are glorifying Prabhupada. By living according to Prabhupada's directions, we are glorifying Prabhupada. And then our life stands as a glorification of Prabhupada, that we gave him our life, because that's what he asked us to do. He said, please give me this one lifetime. So many lifetimes already, you have done what you wanted to. You've done your own thing. Now this life, Prabhupada said, you give to me. Just this one life. You just switch off your mind, you know, just do what I'm asking. One life. So that's a further way the spiritual master is glorified. It is said one can recognize a great Vaishnava by how many Vaishnavas he has made. So that means by how much he has changed his life. It's not only like, where a person admits that he's a devotee. Are you a devotee? Yes, I'm a devotee. Okay, done. No, it means the person has to change his life. Right? And that's not a one-time thing. That's not like, now I have surrendered. No, it is a matter of learning. We have to learn. We have to learn what it means to be a Vaishnava. And we have to, little by little, adjust and make the changes. And then the total change of personality will come. It's by making many small changes, there will be a big change. And by making many small changes, we will be able to make a big change. Sometimes I say, don't worry so much about what you cannot do. Do what you can do. Focus on what you can do and do it. And by doing those things that you can do now, you will be able to do things tomorrow that you cannot do today. Because all those things that we can do, they will give us through them we make spiritual advancement, and through spiritual advancement we'll get strength. And through that strength we will be able then to take a bigger step. Therefore, I like to say that every service looks like a service in itself, right? Of importance in itself. Now I am the pujari, and that is my service, right? And that's like a necessary service, an important service. But then we can see how, like, Radhanath Maharaj used to be a pujari, right? And now it has brought him to where he is now. So every service is actually the preparation for a bigger service. Yeah. And that's how it is. Therefore, each time it has to carry on, and we have to, maybe in the beginning We take responsibility for things. Someone is good in cleaning. Oh, make him in charge of cleaning. Someone's good in decoration. Make them in charge of decoration. Someone knows all the slokas. All right, make him in charge of training the new devotees. And of course, he has good behavior and so on. So, according to capacity, we get a certain charge. But that will then, because we take that responsibility in that field, we develop that quality further. And then that will give us the opportunity to take on more. Therefore, we should not become complacent and just same old thing. No. We should increase. We should somehow or other increase our offering to Krishna. That's the idea. So the whole system is like that. Initiation, first initiation, second initiation. And in the beginning, as I said, we may take charge of things, like things have to be clean. Right? And it's like, and others are not up to the standard, it's not clean enough, chastise. Yes. But ultimately, the things in this movement, it raises the question, are the people for the movement, or is the movement for the people? That is a theme that comes up sometimes. And what is it? What's your opinion? Now we're going to ask around. Is the movement for the people, or are the people for the movement? Or Brahmana? Please, comment. Quick and loud.
If you don't have people, you don't have a movement.
Yeah.
So the people should be for the movement.
The people should be for the movement, not the movement for the people.
The movement is the people, right?
Yeah. Okay, let's try with Piari, see what he says.
Movement for the people.
Why? The movement for the people. Power to the people.
It's a compassionate movement, so you're trying to preach, you get more people, and you get them to preach, and then that nourishes everyone's heart. Mm-hmm. You're not preaching the Thai.
Sachi Kumar.
I'd say it's both.
Huh? Can you clarify it? As loud as possible, so that everyone can hear, also the ladies in the back.
Everybody needs Krishna consciousness to achieve success in life. So in that sense, the movement is for the people. But then, in order to become successful, we need to serve and offer service to Krishna and make the movement available to everybody else. So in that sense, the people also have to play their role within the movement.
Krishna Chaitanya.
I think the movement is there for us to take.
Loud, loud, loud. No one can hear you. I'm speaking to the world. The movement is for us to take. Like that.
Leading, I think it's in the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada said that he created this movement for us to come and take association of devotees. So I say it's the movement for the people. As you said, the people for the movement, both, actually.
Okay. Yes.
I think it's both. Both.
You have to explain. You can't just think. We want to know why.
Loud.
We're deaf. We're all totally deaf.
Because we need association. So if it wasn't of the people, we wouldn't be like getting association. And again, like Krishna, he needs his devotees when he's on page. That's where he's part and parcel. So we have to serve the people for the movement and movement for the people.
Okay, I got the whole saffron brigade now. That's what you get for putting on the saffron. And you can speak loud, I know.
I should say both, because it's Lord Chaitanya's movement, and his mission is all about distributing the mercy to others. So that's a movement for the people, but people for the movement, because we are assisting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in picking the fruits and in distributing them. So that's people for the movement.
Yeah, it is both. And of course, you know, the movement for the people is that the people get a chance to go back to Godhead. Right? That you all didn't say, but that's like the ultimate, the bottom line, you know. It's a movement that is particularly there for people to go back to Godhead, as many as possible. In order to provide that facility, we need the movement to be strong and big so that many people get the opportunity. So we make our contribution for that. But if you weigh the two together, right, make your contribution to the movement, but make sure you go back to Godhead. Right? So if you look at, like, which of the two is most important? I'll sacrifice my life for the movement. That's okay. But don't forget to go back to Godhead in the process. Right? So that sort of puts a... yes, we need to... sometimes we need to be selfish in spiritual life. Because the movement, you know, the movement, there's no end to it, right? To the needs of a movement. I remember myself when I was involved in the construction of the Mayapur Samadhi. You know, I don't know, if you must have seen pictures of the building, and then it has the dome, like this, half round, and then a veranda, which is kind of like that. So the veranda being curved looked like a mouth to me. And then, you know, the dome of the samadhi, like the head, and this samadhi was just saying, feed me, feed me. And I just had to, like, bring endless supplies, you know, just more and more, you know, like more and more building materials, more and more contracts, more and more court cases, more and more money, more and more man, more. And then at one point you're chanting your rounds like, that's not, so first sadhana, Srila Prabhupada said, actually Srila Prabhupada said, first health, then sadhana, then service. Because when health is gone, then even those who have taste, you know, are struggling. Right? So we look after our health. But that means you have to sort of keep a certain space for the health, you know. And then sadhana, and then service. So we see there is a hierarchy. There is a hierarchy. And so somewhere a certain degree of selfishness is also there. Healthy self-preservation is also a sign of humility. It's not overestimating, you know, like, I mean, I'm going to take on the world, yeah, okay, you know, great, you know, I mean, but the world's heavy, like, it's like, Atlas, you know, is like the symbol of the one who's almost being crushed by the world, right? And it's like that, you know, it's only, we have to see how much we can handle, and we have to protect our spiritual well-being so that we are spiritually strong, so that there can be some susukam kartamaviyam, devotional services joyfully performed. It's allowed. It's not forbidden. It's not that he who suffers the most makes, in the name of Krishna, makes the most advancements. No. Susukam kartamavyayam. It may be joyfully performed. At one point in the discussion was about Mayapur and about the temple in Mayapur, and Prabhupada had said he wanted the biggest temple, and in one of the later conversations Jayapataka Maharaj is talking about making it bigger and bigger, and Prabhupada is talking about making it smaller and smaller. Saying, no, that will be too difficult. Prabhupada saying, no, I think a little less is also good. Yeah, I mean, at that point, sometimes Prabhupada would push his men, right? But at other times, but also within the realm of what is realistic, within the realm of what is possible. So, in this way, there's balance, right? I've been speaking about balance lately, and balance is the most difficult thing in life, because even when you think you've just got it together, you just have balanced everything, then something happens which upsets the balance, right? Constantly. So to put things into a balance is very, very difficult. Some people say, Burijan Prabhu actually told us, he said, like, balancing is like riding a bicycle. It's like you have to always adjust, you know, the balance point. You have to constantly adjust to find balance. There's truth in that. But then I came to the answer to the question, how to be balanced, recently, as I was there after so many years. And it was basically, if you want to create balance in your life, just add Krishna. Add Krishna. Somehow or other, add Krishna. And the more Krishna you add, the more balance you get into your life. That's actually the system. Yeah. That will balance everything. Just add Krishna. Think about that. Of course, Prabhupada said 5 plus 5 is 10, 2 plus 2 is 4, and everything plus Krishna is Vrindavan. So if you just add Krishna, gradually there will be Vrindavan. And once we are in Vrindavan, then that will be fulfilling. And when we are fulfilled, everything becomes balanced. That's why I'm saying just add Krishna. Because ultimately, fulfillment means it will take care of all our needs. Then what do we need? I always like the Greek example of Diogenes, who was living very simple and in a rain barrel, actually, an old rain barrel. That was his shelter. And Alexander the Great, somehow or other, he liked Diogenes' renunciation and so on. So he came before Diogenes. And then Diogenes asked him, "So, Alexander, what are you going to do?" He said, "Well, I'm going to conquer the world." And then Diogenes said, "All right. Then what will you do after you've conquered the world?" "After I've conquered the world, I'll come and sit next to you." Then Diogenes said, "Why don't you sit next to me right now? Why bother conquer the world? Just sit next to me right now. Because when you sit here, there's really no need to conquer the world. There's nothing to conquer, because we have all we need." So that was that is an interesting point, because it's not only Alexander the Great who's trying to conquer the world, but it's even Mickey Mouse who's trying to conquer the world, and everybody and his mate is trying to conquer the world in his own way. We also are trying to at least get our corner. We also have our agenda. So many things we just want to achieve. And then you see a simple person who has minimized his needs. Right? Minimizing our needs is essential for a Vaishnava. Vaishnava has to minimize the needs in this material world. Because by minimizing the needs in the material world, we have time and energy for worshipping and glorifying Krishna. Otherwise, where's the time? Where's the time? This is the thing. If someone's doing service in Ratiyatra, Ratiyatra is glorifying Krishna, so, you know, one can indirectly be part of a bigger scheme that glorifies Krishna, and just in that way not glorify Krishna directly. One is not speaking about Krishna, but indirectly one may be dealing with the material energy for Krishna. That's there. But that's not enough. We also need to do some direct glorification of Krishna. Just as Jiva Goswami says, all service must be preceded and followed by chanting of Hare Krishna. Yeah. So every day we must invest in direct glorification of Krishna. Not just indirect. I'm doing service. I'm doing so much service. I'm okay. No. How much time are you spending in direct glorification of Krishna? Chanting and in reading the glorification of Krishna. We cannot glorify Krishna. We don't know how. That's why it says that there are two types of prayers mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. There are 64 aspects of devotional service mentioned as part of sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice. Then it is said that there are two types of prayers. One is vandanam, the other one is vigyapti. So vigyapti means you make your own prayers. And vandanam means you learn the prayers of the great acharyas. And Prabhupada told us, you learn the prayers of the great acharyas because by memorizing these prayers, they pray in a much more exalted way. Because if we have to, you know, write down 10 prayers, like, well, okay, 10 prayers, dear Krishna, please give me devotional service. Okay. Second prayer. Dear Krishna, please give me strength. Dear Krishna, what else? Quick. Don't think. Say. Huh?
Get rid of my attachment.
Get rid of my attachment. Dear Krishna, quick. What? Prayer? Quick. Please give me taste for chanting. Dear Krishna, please, quick.
Save me from lust.
Save me from lust. Okay, you know, I mean, Krishna, I want all these things. Save me from lust, cut my attachments, all these things, see? It's already prayers where we want Krishna to do something for us, you know? Can you fix my problems, please? Dear Krishna, please fix my teeth. You see? I didn't give you time to think. That's why I was shooting fast, so that you, like, just said whatever would come up immediately, you know. Wouldn't allow you to sort of come up with a nice mental, nice intellectually constructed prayer. No. Put some prayer. Quick. You know. And then what comes out is we are at that stage where if we make our own prayers, sooner or later Krishna is going to become the order supplier. Right? Oh dear Krishna, please fix my teeth. Yes. Oh Lord, you know, won't you buy me? So yeah, it goes that direction. So the acharyas, they've become selfless, and they really want to see. Therefore, when they pray, they really look at the glories of Krishna, and they're just overwhelmed, you know, overwhelmed. Yeah. Like when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took a servant, then he was just praying like you have made me your carrier, you know, you have made me your carrier. I'm like totally unqualified, but somehow or other you have given me this mercy. Indrajumna Maharaj one year wrote a nice thing in a Vyasa Puja offering, which was like, it basically was, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada, for giving me this wonderful service. You know, it is, and the whole offering was just appreciating the great, how nice the gift was that he got. It wasn't like asking, oh, you know, please, you know, give me strength. I'm so fallen. No, it's just, thank you very much. It was a positive, nice approach. Mm. So in this way, vandanam, we pray to the prayers of the acharyas, because there we come uplifted to another dimension of glorification. Therefore, Bhagavatam, we cannot glorify Krishna like the Bhagavatam can. Right? Therefore, we go into the Bhagavatam, because there we learn to glorify Krishna. Without the Bhagavatam, we have no idea what to glorify Krishna for. Dear Krishna, you know, you're so wonderful, because?
Because of your color.
Wonderful because?
Smile.
Wonderful because? Loud?
Food playing.
Wonderful?
Because you have reddish lips.
Because you have what?
Reddish lips.
Ready slops? I don't understand. What?
Reddish lips.
Reddish lips. Oh, I got it. In the back now.
Kindness.
I didn't hear a word.
You're
kindness.
You have Radharani.
The lady in the middle, yes.
Loud.
The lady sitting against the door. Loud, okay, we're in deaf. Yes. One time I was also going around, you know, the room, asking like different reasons why Krishna was wonderful. And there was one devotee who was like a bit of a tendency towards Kyan, and he said, because he's the cause of the effect. So there may be many reasons why Krishna may be appreciated as wonderful. And all these things are very nice, which we have said. But then when we read the Bhagavatam, right, it's just amazing. It's just amazing how the glories of Krishna are described. It expands everything we can say. And gradually we learn the words of the Bhagavatam and begin to realize, just by memorizing verses of the Bhagavatam, right, it's like, you know, you enter into another dimension. And in this way, we can see that that's what Prabhupada did, you know. I mean, think of Prabhupada. He was a businessman. He was working for this pharmaceutical company. He had to travel a lot. He was a representative, and he was all over the country of pharmaceuticals and traveling a lot on the train. Right? Now, you may say, I don't know what Prabhupada did on that train, right? And that's a fact. I also don't know what he did on that train. But I suspect that some of the time on that train he spent reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Because later on he had such an absorption in Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's not possible that at age 59, you know, or 57, so he just suddenly started reading. Yeah? So now Vanaprastha, and then, you know, he started reading. No, if you start that late in life, it's difficult. Right? Those who, you know, people who start Krishna consciousness when they're older, they have difficulty in absorbing all the knowledge. Right? Of course, you know, they have an advantage that whatever knowledge they get, they have also the life experience behind it, therefore they have a deeper realization of the knowledge that they're absorbing. But then these young people, they absorb everything so fast, you know, 2 years in the movement and the quoting slokas, and they know this and that Sanskrit, and the old folks are sort of like, you know, Sara. Tia. para sada, and a 6-year-old, you know, is like reciting a whole verse just like faultless, kind of like, kind of like, try not to be seen, but so we can understand that Srila Prabhupada spent years with the Bhagavatam. To have this kind of absorption in the Bhagavatam that he had meant he spent years. It didn't just start at Vanaprastha. For many years, every day throughout his life, for many years he'd been reading the Bhagavatam. That's how at the end of life you can know the Bhagavatam. Even me, even when I was like so busy with that samadhi, and I saw that mouse, they bring me more and more and more, and I had to chant my rounds in Mongol Arctic every day in the back, because at 6 o'clock I had to start. And by the time I was finished, I was really finished, you know. So I would just go to Mongol Arctic, offer obeisances, and go to the back and chant my rounds. That was it. That was like my life. Too busy. Too much busy. So much busy, but still reading Bhagavatam, because without Bhagavatam, how can you survive? Without Bhagavatam, dead ho gaya. Dead ho gaya. No, without Bhagavatam, we are living corpses, ghosts, ghostly creatures. Yes, without Bhagavatam. Because without Bhagavatam, we just live in the emptiness of our own mind. Anybody home? Home, home, home. somebody there. It's Bhagavatam that actually gives, that takes us away from the mental platform. So let us understand that it is through the Bhagavatam that we learn, that we learn to glorify, that we discover the glories of Krishna every day. See you tonight. I'll ask you how many pages. Any question, any comment? Yes, Rukmini.
Sometimes I feel that devotional service saves us, but sometimes I feel that even if sadhana doesn't save me in a situation, sometimes the service does. So then there's hierarchy in practical experience sometimes.
Yeah, it's all saving us, but will it be enough at the end of the day? You know what I'm saying? It saves us. We're on board, somehow or other, on the Jnana Plavena, on the boat of transcendental knowledge. Although, we're still deck passengers, on the slippery deck. We didn't get a cabin yet. We're on the slippery deck, and the waves are coming in, and you can be washed overboard when you're on the slippery deck. So we're not completely safe yet, still on the slippery deck. Only when you become advanced do you get a cabin on this boat of transcendental knowledge. Then you're not so easily slipping overboard anymore. So our position is still a bit precarious. And although we are in a transcendental boat, the boat is rocking on the waves of material nature. So we're feeling the effect of material life very much. Very much. And therefore, our sadhana is sometimes suffering. But at least we have our service. Yes, it keeps us on board the ship. That's true. But only some passengers will be allowed to get off the ship at the end of this life. Others, they have to stay one more life on board, or many more lives on board. They have to continue their devotional service over many lives. So yes, we are in. Service gives us the connection. But if there's no sadhana, will it be enough to go back to Godhead? That's my question. I wouldn't bank on it myself. I'm scared about that. You know, I'd say no. The sadhana has to be there. Otherwise, you know, I'm not sure what will happen. I can't guarantee anything then. If that's not there, the service, yes, keeps us connected. Absolutely. We're on the deck. We're not out in the ocean of nescience. You know. Gone. But is it enough to go back to Godhead? So those things we should really think about, I think. Other questions? Come on.
I like it when you glorify the Bhagavatam and make it so much importance and how important it is, really. It's really carried me in devotional service. I feel that you become more enthusiastic for service when you read more Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And the material energy seems to not affect you as much when doing the service.
Yeah. Yeah, I know book distributors who were like big book distributors, and they started off, you know, like being out there like 8 hours a day on the street and pushing books with great passion. Right? And then over time, they did less and less hours, and they started to read, you know, the Bhagavatam, sometimes for 3 hours every day. And then they did, you know, that many hours less book distribution, but they didn't do any less books. Somehow or other. Yeah? And it's like Vaisheshika, who is like, you know, a senior Prabhupada disciple, spiritual master, and like a very powerful book distributor, who has a website called distributebooks.com, which gives you many interesting things. And Vaisheshika is also on YouTube with very interesting book distribution videos, which even if you're not a book distributor, you can just look at simply for enjoyment. I mean, it's very nice. But he is not only distributing books, he's also teaching how to do it. And the first thing he says is that, you know, your sadhana, right? He says it's your effort, your bliss in the sadhana that sort of spills over. That spills over into your service. Right? And that sort of gives the potency. So by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not that we are wasting time and that like, I have no time, you know what I mean? I have no time. Make time. Somehow or other, make time. Read the Bhagavatam. And the output will increase. It's really that absorption. It's not even like reading, it's about absorption. It's about thinking, you know, like that the Bhagavatam is so much on our mind that we're just thinking about it. Absorption. That's the idea. Yeah. It's like... And if there's no time in one's life, then maybe we have to change our life, readjust things. Something has to go. That's how it is then. Make time. When you have a new girlfriend, then, you know, suddenly you have time. Yeah, so it's amazing how much time then you have, right? For her. And really, it's like, or... boyfriend, same thing, so much time. And when you take vanaprastha, the first thing I noticed when I took vanaprastha was like saying nothing bad about, like, you know, my previous ashram and so on, but it was fine, you know, like Grihastha ashram was perfectly fine. But anyway, in due course of time I took vanaprastha, and when I did it, I chanted my rounds, I read, and then I still had time left over. I think, what do I do now, you know? I had so much time. It was just amazing. That was the first realization I got. Right? It's just that an ocean of time is amazing. So much time. That is the benefit of us. Yeah, and it's really no malice, you know, nothing about that, but it's just really like amazing when you're alone, how much time you have. And when you're with someone, gosh, you know, same for the ladies, you know, they're all day busy, right, with like people's socks and people's this and people's that, you know, and people talking to this one, talking to that one. In the end, the whole day is gone. When you're all alone, oceans of time. Any other question?
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand like, the benedictions from the Bhagavatams. Because mm-hmm. by reading the Bhagavatam, there's a certain benediction when you become opulent, learned, and longevity. Can you please
elaborate
more from there?
Well, all the benedictions of the Bhagavatam are aiming towards Krishna. Because the Bhagavatam is aiming only towards Krishna. So if any benedictions are given, they are given for the purpose of devotional service. Like Sudama was very poor, but he was given incredible wealth. And he went to Krishna and so on, and he brought Krishna this chip rice, you know what I mean, and didn't even give it to him, but he had it. His wife had given it to him, you know, go to Krishna and go and ask Krishna to help us because we're so poor. Sudama didn't bother, he just saw Krishna, he was in ecstasy, you know what I mean, so happy to see Krishna. Never asked for anything, had his wife had given him the chip rice, he also never gave it to Krishna. But Krishna says, what you got there? Oh, that? Oh, that's some chip rice. Oh, show me. And a little piece in cloth. She said, no, that's not for you. No, Krishna just, oh, chip rice. Yeah, the goddess of fortune stopped him, but just that's one little bit. Then when he came home, the area where he lived, there was this beautiful palace, this amazing palace he'd never seen before. So what is this? Then this aristocratic queen, you know, served by maidservants, came, and when she was coming close, he saw that it was his wife. He was shocked. He'd never seen her like that. And then they dressed up Sudama also in opulence and so on, and he lived in opulence. But it did not disturb his devotional service whatsoever. It didn't affect his bhakti. And thus, that wealth, it had no benefit. It had only one benefit, to show the glory of Sudama that he was transcendental to all that wealth. That was the only thing it was good for. Otherwise, no benefit. He was just equally absorbed in devotional service. So Krishna wanted to glorify his devotees. So all the benedictions are either is to increase the glory of Krishna or the glory of the devotees. That's all. Those are the benedictions of the Bhagavatam. Other questions? Ask now. Next week I'll be gone. This is your chance. No question is stupid, except a stupid question. No, but okay, no questions anymore. Then we have to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His Holiness Gnana Gana Maharaj Ki Jai.